Today's shir is Masechet Bava Basra, Daf Chaf Gimel. We will begin on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis, the bottom line. As we learned in the previous shir, Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara taught us, Rav Tovi Mamasna taught us, that Grama ben Nezakin is Asur. Causing Nezak is even Asur. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef Havalei Hanu Tali. Rabbi Yosef had these palm dates to have Os umni v'yosvit osayu umnim, blood letters would sit under this, under these trees and let blood. V'os orvi achli dama, and birds would come and eat the blod, and then v'salki abei tali, they would fly back up on top of the tree. They would fly back up on top of the tree. Or mafsi tamri, and they would ruin the dates because they would, the blood in their mouth would go on to the dates. Tosfos explains that certainly these blood letters did not sit in the property of the tree owner. One can't sit in somebody else's property and draw blood. They were sitting in their own property, which neighbored the property of the trees and caused damage to the fruit because of the blood in the mouth of the birds. Actually, the Rishonim ask that the opinion, as we have been learning, of Rabbi Yossi, is that one is only chayiv for causing damage in a situation of giri delay, when he is the one that's creating the damage. So ask the Mefarshim, why is this considered a situation of giri delay, if it's only I'm sitting there letting blood and the bird comes? And in fact, because of this question, some Rishonim suggest that this that the Gemara is now discussing, that it should be Asur, is only going according to the opinion of the Rabbanon, who are more machmir than Rabbi Yossi in such a situation. However, other Rishonim express that this is even going according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Some explain because these blood letters would chase the birds away with their hands, and by chasing the birds away with their hand, that's considered giri delay. Another pshat that I saw from the Rid is as follows. Rabbi Yossi, as we just explained, is more lenient in what is considered causing damage and what is not considered causing damage. But as we've discussed and we'll learn in Mitzvah Shem on Daf Chaf Hey, Rabbi Yossi's opinion is based on Zeh Noiteya B'Tarich Shaloi V'Zeh Choyfe B'Tarich Shaloi. People are allowed to do things in their own property. So, says the Rid, Rabbi Yossi's level of leniency is greater when I'm doing something in my own property, because I'm allowed to do something in my own property. But Rabbi Yossi will agree that we have to have a higher level of concern in the Rishus HaRabim. And what was happening here was that these blood letters were sitting in the Rishus HaRabim, neighboring the tree of this individual, and by letting blood there, they were causing damage to the dates of the neighbor's trees. Amalei Rabbi Yosef. And therefore Rabbi Yosef said to them, Afik lekarka mahacha, remove your blood letting from here, that you shouldn't ruin my fruit. Amalei Abaya. So Abaya said to him, for grama here, isn't this just a situation of grama, and grama should be mutter? Amalei, to which he responded, as we learned at the end of the previous year, Hacha Amar Rav Tuvi Bamasna, Zay Sameres, Grama ben Zokin, even if it's only a situation of Gromit Asr. Ask the Gemara V'Achsekelhu, but don't these blood letters have a Chazaka to let blood in this area? And as we have described, there are two types of Chazaka. There's the Chazaka which is known as Cheskes Habatim, which we will, Mitzvah Shem, discuss in the next perek. Cheskes Habatim teaches us that if I am on a property that was previously owned by someone else, and that person says, what are you doing on my property? And I say, I bought it from you. So if I was on this property for 3 years, and the owner says, if you bought it from me, show me the deed indicating that you bought it, I could say, I bought it. The fact that I don't have the deed is because I don't hold on to papers for so long. And And the fact that I was on this property for 3 years without you protesting, that the halacha says will make that the property should belong to me. But for it to be a valid chazaka, there's a need for a taina. There's a need that I say that I bought the property from you. Without the taina, the chazaka is no chazaka. Here, we're talking about a cheskas tashmish. Did I do something like bloodletting next to my neighbor? Here, there's a machloikas rishonim, and I did it for 3 years without my neighbor protesting. Here, there's a machloikas of a taina is required. Or the fact that I did it for all these years without my neighbor protesting is enough to create a situation of chazaka. Says the Gemara, how could you claim that you have a chazaka? Hamar of Nachman, Amar of Avua, ein chazaka l'nezakim. One cannot have a chazaka to make damage. Says Abayi v'lav itmala, and wasn't it said, Ramari am b'kutra, only smoke you can't have a chazaka for. Razvir Amar Beisakise, you can't have a chazaka for a Beisakise. We'll explain this more in a moment. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef said, Hani li danina datoy, I who am very sensitive, birds putting blood on my fruit is kikutra Beisakise damali, and no chazaka could be created here. There's machloikas rishayim that discuss when we're saying that you can't have a chazaka for a nezakim, to what degree is that said? Some Rishonim say a chazaka can never be created for nezakin, even if my neighbor didn't protest. Others say that a chazaka cannot be created for nezakin if my neighbor didn't protest. But if my neighbor explicitly gave me permission, then a chazaka is created even if it's a situation of nezakin. Others say that just my neighbor giving permission is not adequate, because he said he could always claim, I gave you permission because I thought it wouldn't bother me, but it is bothering me. Therefore they say a chazaka is only created in a situation where my neighbor took payment for me to have a right to do this. And yet others say the payment in itself is also not enough. What's required is an official act of kinyan. If there's an official act of kinyan between my and my neighbor, then my neighbor can never back out. And yet others say that the neighbor could always back out, because he could always claim, I didn't know, I couldn't take it. As the Shar Mitzion Balocha explains, he explains that even though certainly one can't be mazik or create a situation of hezik between himself and his neighbor, says the Shar Mitzion Balocha, that means, like we learned in Masechta Bavakama, that I, let's say I own animals. I have the obligation to watch my animals. I have the obligation to make sure that my animals can't go out and do damage to my neighbor. And therefore the halacha would be that I have to put up a fence around my property to make sure that the animals don't go out and do damage. But in a situation where there's nothing that I could do to prevent that, like an owl gemara, if I'm letting blood, there's nothing I could do to prevent the birds from coming. There's nothing that I could do to prevent the smoke from coming out from a fire. There is a concept of chazakal and nezakim. So the gemara says when it comes to a beis akise, then when it comes to a bathroom, it could prevent. My neighbor could always claim he can't take it. The Mefarshim explained that what kind of bathroom is being discussed here. It's a bathroom as they had in those times, not like our modern bathrooms that we have sewage systems that carry the waste away. Rather, it's talking about a bathroom that the waste was left above ground and had a terrible odor, and my neighbor could say he can't take that terrible odor. In fact, I saw a tshuva in the Tashbats where the question was brought up, where there was a neighbor who was a Talmud Chacham, used to sit and learn, and the members of the community wanted to make a meat market, a butcher's market, next to his home. And the neighbor, the Talmud Chacham, was complaining that this meat market would terribly disturb him in his learning, because the people who frequent the butchers in the meat market speak inappropriately, and that would be very disturbing to his learning. And the people who want to establish this meat market say, no, we will legislate that the people who come there have to speak appropriately. To which the Talmud Chacham said, you can't even create a situation that these butchers, when they attend the Beis HaKnesses, should not speak, even though one is not allowed to speak during the evening, and should speak appropriately in the Beis HaKnesses. You can't create that type of situation. You expect to be able to create that type of an environment in a meat market. And therefore, the Tashbatz says, as our Gemara says, Ein chazoka l'nezokim, and the Talmud Chacham has a valid claim to prevent them from making the meat market. However, the Poskim do say that this concept of Ein chazoka l'nezokim cannot be overdone. Meaning that they discuss a situation where, let's say, there's a neighbor living in a lower apartment, and he's very sensitive, and every time the neighbors who live above him either walk or talk, he gets very disrupted by it. He certainly doesn't have a valid claim, because as the Paiskim say, Ein chazokel nezokim means when there's something particularly unusual, disturbing happening. But when it's a normal living situation, a neighbor cannot claim that this is something that he can't take. Although I did see a tshuva from Yitzchak Zilberstein, who discusses a situation where there was a neighbor living in an apartment house who was nebuch, not well, and wasn't able to care for themselves, and wasn't able to properly clean their apartment, and therefore a terrible odor emanated from this apartment. And the question was, can they force the neighbor to get cleaning help to keep the apartment clean? And he paskins that certainly under normal circumstances, neighbors in a home can demand that a person who owns an apartment in that house keep the apartment clean and get the proper help to keep the apartment clean. However, here he says it's a situation, nebuch of an oinus, where this individual is not well, and therefore the other members of this house should pay for the cleaning help to keep that sick individual's apartment clean. In the Gemara speaking about kutra, smoke, which the Gemara says is a situation that a neighbor cannot tolerate, there's actually a machloikis rishonim what kutra means. What does it mean, smoke? Some rishonim say that kutra is the kind of smoke that's constant. And constant smoke is disturbing to the neighbor, and he could claim, I can't stand it. Others say kutra means not constant smoke, but rather what kutra means, intense smoke. And that intense smoke is bothering to the neighbor. And this question of what kutra means and the entire issue of smoking actually is halacha l'maaseh shaila, where the question Rav Moshe discusses in the Gris Moshe, and the Tzitz Eliezer discusses a situation where there is somebody who smokes in a public place, and can people stop them? Certainly, as the Paiskim discuss, some of these tshuvas were written prior to it was proven without any question that smoking is hazardous to health. Not only smoking, but even secondhand smoke is hazardous. But even if it's only a question if it's hazardous, then the Siva says that if somebody's doing something where I claim what he's doing is hazardous to me, and he says it isn't, it's his obligation to prove that it's not hazardous. Until he could prove it, I could demand that he not do it. But even if we'll say that this secondhand smoke is not dangerous to one's health, certainly it's disturbing, the smoke is disturbing to the other people there, and they therefore can claim that they want the person to stop smoking. The question that comes up particularly is, let's say it was a public place, and again I'm not speaking in a situation where the law prohibits smoking in a public place. We certainly have to follow the law. We're talking if there is no such law in this place, can it just be stopped because based on the halacha, where already is a chazaka that smoking takes place here? So certainly if we'll say the Paiskim, that the definition of kutra is that it's an intense smoke that's disturbing, so the people in this place could claim that even the smoke of one cigarette is disturbing, and that the person, nobody should be allowed to smoke here. But even if we'll claim even if we follow the opinion of the Rishonim that Kutra means constant smoke, and it isn't necessarily a situation discussed in the Tzitz Eliezer that this constant smoke taking place in this area. However, even if there isn't constant smoke, he says, by smoking by one individual, what happens is if there are a number of individuals smoking, so when one individual finishes his cigarette, the next individual begins smoking, and so on. So since we have a possibility of constant smoking, as different individuals smoke in this public area, it's considered like a situation of kutra, of highly disturbing, that the halacha is that the neighbor, the people could stop anybody from smoking here. Says the Mishnah, Machikim as a shoivich meneir, one has to distance the nest from the city, 50 amma, 50 amma. Furthermore, a person is not allowed to make a nest in his own property unless he has 50 amma in all sides that he owns. And as Taishas explains, actually our Mishnah is teaching us two separate dinim. One din is that a nest has to be distanced from a city by 50 amma, because since in those times it was very common, people would put out food on the roof to dry, and the birds flying may ruin that food. But there's another halacha, that even if the shayvich, even if the nest is distanced from the city, but it's near the grain fields of other people, there too there's a halacha, one has to distance his nest from those fields. And Tosfos goes on to explain, our Mishnah actually has to teach us both dinim, because if we only had the halacha that one has to distance his nest from the food that's on the roof, there we would say that since that food is open on the roof, so it's very easy for the birds to access that food, that's why we have to distance the nest. But grain that's in the field, which is not that visible, maybe we don't have to distance. That's why we have to teach the din of distancing from the grain fields. And if we only learned the halacha about distancing from the fields, I would say perhaps there is a lot of grain, so you have to properly distance your nest. But in the city, where it's not all that common that people leave food on the roof, maybe the halacha was that you don't have to distance. That's why our Mishnah teaches us both dinim, that you have to distance the nest properly. The Rishonim go on to say that even according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, who we learned and will learn, is of the opinion al anizik laharchik asatzmai, that it's the damaged party who has the obligation to stay away. Here, since it's the birds that are creating the damage, the halach is I have to distance, and the nizik has nothing he could do to stop it. I have to distance my nest from it. Rabbi Yehuda has a different shear. He says, base abbas kurim, they have to be distanced by an area of 4 kur. Shmolei shega yoyna, that's the amount a bird normally flies in one uninterrupted. And as the Mefarshim explained, it's not that there's a machloikis between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda how much a bird flies uninterrupted. There is no machloikis regarding that. The machloikis is just how much distancing is required. V'mlochoi, but if somebody purchased a property with a nest on it, even if it's a very small piece of property, a field based rover, harei b'cheskasoi, I can leave it the way it is. And as the Mefarshim go on to explain, they say that not only if I bought it that way, can I keep it that way, but let's say I bought it with a nest, and something happened to that nest, the halach is, I can rebuild the nest. They say the same halacha would be regarding a window that we discussed in the previous year, that I have to distance the window properly from somebody else's window, but let's say it was bought without that distance. In other words, the neighbor agreed that it doesn't have to be distance, I can leave it. Even if the wall falls down and I rebuild the wall, I could put the window up where it was previously. I saw an interesting shaila that Rav Zilberstein discusses. Let's say there was a city where the people of the city wanted to build a fountain in the town square with birds to be next to that fountain, that it should be a tourist attraction. Can the members, can people in the city say that they don't want this because the birds will ruin, there'll be droppings, there'll be noise, they don't want this? So he quotes the Chazon Ish, who explains that the entire concern of a nest, as we explained when we learned in our Gemara, is strictly in a situation that the nest is going to eat up, the birds are going to eat up the food. Nowadays, explains the Chazon Ish, that isn't the case. People don't leave food on the roof to dry, and therefore it's not usur, even if people are protesting. If it's being done according to the will of the majority, or it's being done by the will of the people who are the people who run the city, it's mutter. Ask the Gemara, Chamishim Amma Vesuloi, is the halacha that you could only, that you only have to distance it for 50 amas? For a mini, it says in a Mishnah, in Parasim Nishbin Leyoinim, one may not set out traps to capture birds. Elm can hay rachim ani yishuv shloshim ris. So you see that birds could fly shloshim ris, which is 8,000 amas, a lot more than 50. Answers the Gemara, Amar Abaye, Meishit Shaiti Tuva, they fly certainly much more than 50 amma. However, Kruchsayu Bechamishim Amsmalya, the food that they eat is, they have enough food in the first 50 amma. Our Mishnah is focused on them eating other people's food, that is the sheer 50 amma. Ask the Gemara, Umeishit Shloshim Risvasuloi, do they only fly these 8,000 amma? Vatanya Beyishuv, Afila Meir Mila Yifris, in a settled area they're not allowed to even fly 100 mil, so we see that they fly very, very far. Answers the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef Amar Beyishuv Krumim, if there's a place where there are vineyards, so that then they're able to fly much further because they rest, they go from vineyard to vineyard. Similarly, Rav Amma is referring to a situation of Yishuv Shaifchin. There are a lot of nests along the way, and since there are a lot of nests along the way, they rest from one nest to the next, and that's why they could travel much further. Ask the Gemara, how could you say it's referring to a situation of Yishuv Shaifchin, v'tepklei mishum Shaifchayim gufayu? Once there are a lot of Shaifchin, you're not allowed to set up, if it's an area that has a lot of nests, you're not allowed to set up traps because of the nearby nests. Why does it have to say because they could fly so far? Answers the Gemara, Ibai same the day. They're all owned by him. So there's no problem setting up traps because you're only going to be trapping your own birds. Ibai same the Knani. These birds belong to a guy. And as the Rishonim explained, even though the halacha certainly is that gezel akum, one is not allowed to steal from a guy, the truth is, as we learned in Masechet Bava Kamma, the entire issue when it comes to speaking about birds, about taking these birds, it's only mipnei darkei shalom. And by akum, they didn't make a special gzeira, mipnei darkei shalom. Vibai same, it's a situation of hefker, and therefore there's no in the isser of hefka of trapping them, but there is isser, as we're learning in our Mishnah, of eating somebody else's food. Rabbi Yehuda, we learned that in the Mishnah based Abba Koran, and Rabbi Yehuda also taught us that if one bought a field, even a small field that already had a nest in it, he could keep it that way. That if somebody yarshined or bought a property with a nest in it, we say that the person who put the nest there must have put it there legally, and therefore this person could keep it. The Rishonim suggest, going back to something that we discussed at the beginning of our shir, that it seems that this chazaka requires a taina. We said at the beginning of our shir that there's a question of a cheskas tashmish requires a taina. It seems that here we clearly have a raya that requires a taina. And some in fact say that it's an excellent raya. Others say The Ramban says that here, you every even if we'll say normally, a taina is not required for a cheskas tashmish. Here, everybody will agree, says the Ramban, that a taina is required. Because since my birds fly directly into somebody else's property, it's not that just that I'm doing something in my property that could cause damage to my neighbor, but it's actually my bird flying into somebody else's property. There, everybody will agree to have a chazakah, I have to have a taina. And Al Gemara is teaching us that if somebody bought or yash in such a property, there he has, we make this taina that must be that the person he bought it from or inherited from bought it legally. Ask the Gemara, Yairish Tanina, but this halacha of a Yairish has already been taught us, because it says in the Mishnah, Habam Mishem Yerusha, if somebody has on a property got a Yerusha to which there's a chazaka, and it's our taina. We doesn't have his own taina. We could say certainly the person he yashin it from got it legally. Answer the Gemara, the chiddush here is that for a purchaser we do the same. Ask the Gemara, lekeich namitinina. That's also a halacha that we already have learned, because it says the halacha is that one is not allowed to build out of his home different protrusions into the Rishus HaRabim. But it says in the Mishnah, look, a chotzer, if somebody bought a chotzer, or bazizim gustros, and then balconies extending over the Rishus HaRabim, ha-reizim b'cheskosoy, we assume that the person he bought it from had put them up legally. He got permission from the Rishus HaRabim, from the people who owned the Rishus HaRabim, to build this balcony. Answer the Gemara Tzricha. We need to have this halacha stated both by Rishus HaRabim and by Rishus HaYochid. Diyesh mina hasam gab Rishus HaRabim. If we only had this halacha said by Rishus HaRabim, they mekanis tach shalayhu. We could say maybe what originally happened was that this person recessed his property in order to be able to build this balcony, but he wasn't building the balcony over the Rishus HaRabim. He was building the balcony over the Rishus HaYochid, his own Rishus HaYochid. Inami, achule, when they Rishus HaRabim gabei. It could be that the people, if the Rishus HaRabim gave him Rishus, and the Tosfos explains, why is it likely to assume that the people of the Rishus HaRabim gave him Rishus? Because Tosfos explains, there are many people who are the Bnei Rishus HaRabim. So no one is the real one owner, and no one really has that much benefit from it. So that's why people are more likely to be nice and say, yes, you could build your balcony over the Rishus HaRabim. But of course, the Mefarshim say that it has to be said explicitly. It's not just that they were quiet. They had to give official, explicit permission. Avalach, but in our case, where my nest is doing damage to my neighbor's nest, loy, maybe we don't make this claim. If we only had our Gemara, the Kiva the Yochid Hu, it's only a question between me and my neighbor. I was able to make a deal. It's easier to make a deal with one individual than to make a deal with an entire community. And I was able to make out some sort of a deal with my neighbor to be able to raise birds here. Inami, my neighbor wants to get along with me, and therefore chuli achel gabei, he was meichel me, he explicitly gave me permission. Avarab, man pious, who are you going to make a deal with? Man shavik, who from the Rishus HaRabim is the person that's going to be meichel? And therefore me'emeloi, maybe the halacha is different. Tzricha, we have to say this halacha of te'anim le'keach, both in the situation of a rabbin, and in the situation of a yachid. And as Tosfos goes on to say, the same issue that we have to say, that we need to understand this halacha, both by Rabbim and a Yochid, has to also be said regarding a Yairish, that it has to be said both by Rabbim and a Yochid. So our Mishnah said, Harei b'cheskoso, that if I bought it, and the previous owner lived on it this way, it continues having that chazaka. Ask the Gemara, one cannot create a chazaka when it does damage to someone else. And says the Gemara, as we learned at the beginning of the shir, Rameri Amri, where can't you establish chazaka? Bekutru is smoke, which is particularly disturbing. Rasvid Amma Besakise, which is particularly disturbing, but not in other situations. There one can establish a chazaka. Says the Mishnah. Nipal hanimtza betoy chamishim amma. If a bird is found within 50 amma, if a bird is found within 50 ammas of a nest, harehu shabal ha-shoivach, it belongs to the owner of the nest. We assume that that bird fell from the nearby nest. And as the Ritva explains, actually it's hard to understand that this Mishnah, it makes more sense to say that this Mishnah ought to be a Masechta Baba Metzia, where we learn the halacha of Metzias. But since we've been discussing nest, our Mishnah goes on to this din. Chot mi chamishim amma. But if a bird was found more than 50 amas away from a nest, then the halacha is harei shemaitza, the person who finds it can keep it, and there is no even need, explained the Rishonim, to make a chraza, to make an announcement, because it could have fallen from anybody, and therefore there is no sim. Furthermore, it's hard to have a simon on a bird, and the finder could keep it. If a bird was found between two nests, karvlazer, if it was found closer to one nest, shaloi, karvlazer, if it was found closer to the other nest, shaloi, mechza, mechza, if it was found right in the middle, shnei mechloi, could they divide it? In halacha, in the Torah, we find two different ways for when we have a question, how to resolve it. One is known as roiv. We follow majority, as the Torah says, achri rabba mahatis. There's another concept called karev, something that's closer. Where do we find this concept? We find this concept by an egla rufa. If a corpse is found between two cities, we don't know who murdered this individual. So the halach is, we measure Ziyatza Zikne here, the Zikne here go out and measure which is the closer city to that corpse, and that is the city that will have to go through the Egla Arufa procedure. So now discusses Rav Chanina. I'm Rav Chanina. And we have two conflicting ways of how to resolve a question. We have Roy Vakarov. Majority tells us that it went one way, and Karov tells us it went another way. The halach is that we follow Roiv. Avagav, even though, as we just explained, says Rav Chanina, that both of these concepts are rooted in Daraisa, Ruba Daraisa, the Kurva Daraisa, Afilach Roiv, Adif, we follow Roiv. And the Mefarshim discuss why is Roiv stronger than Karev. Some explain that Roiv is stronger than Karev because Roiv, the Torah tells us, is a Biru. It's a clear way of understanding, of being mavarer, of determining what happened. Karev is only exeris akasev. It's a din that the Torah says that when we have a question, we follow Karev. But since Roiv is considered a situation, a birur, we prefer birur over just a din. However, others explain neither Roiv or Karev can be considered a situation of a real clarity. It's just that the Torah tells us that when we have a question like this, either follow Roiv or Karev. So if both of them are just what the Torah tells us to do, because we don't know what to do, so back to our original question, discusses Rav Shmuel Rozovsky in his Shiurim. Why is Roiv stronger than Karev? So he says this interesting svara. He says, when the Torah tells us to follow Roiv, what the Torah is telling us is, since we don't know, Roiv tells us that this is what must happen. Karev doesn't tell us that this is where it must have come from. Karev tells us that once you establish that this is Karev, don't try to figure out more, because you won't get any better of an answer. And therefore, Roiv is considered more of a beerer. Roiv is considered stronger, and therefore you should follow Roiv over Karev. Tysus goes that we know that the Gemara says many times throughout Shas that if somebody found a piece of meat in a city where 9 butcher shops are kosher and 1 butcher shop is treif, we're allowed to keep that meat because we follow Roiv. So isn't that a riot that we go with Roiv versus Karev, because maybe the meat was found closer to the non-kosher butcher shop, and yet we're saying that Roiv tells us we could assume that the meat is kosher. So Rishonim explained that the meat that was found, that case could be discussing a situation where the meat wasn't found near any specific butcher shop, but could be that if it was found next to a specific butcher shop, we would say that that's where it came from, and that can't be a raya. Ask the Gemara, how could Rav Chanina say, Roiv v'korov, we follow Roiv? The Torah says, V'hoye ira kroiv ala cholo, that when it comes to Egla Rufa process, we always go with, we bring the Egla Rufa from the closest city. V'afgav the ika achrita, the nefishmano, even if there are other cities that have more people. So we see that we follow the korov over the roiv. Answers the Gemara, Bedaleka. It's referring to a situation where there is no city larger than any other city. That's when the Torah says we should go after the closest city. So now we have a very interesting question. What would be the halacha if there is a closest city, there's a close city, but it's not the largest city? What will be the din then? So, it's Machlokes Rishonim. The Tosfos writ, interestingly, says that the entire parish of Egla Arufa wasn't set in such a circumstance. And then in such a circumstance, the din of Egla Arufa would not apply. The Rambam, interestingly, paskins that no, the halacha would be that the largest city would be the city to bring the Egla Arufa. Ask the Gemara, the Lezel, Basaruba Dalma, since there are people coming from the entire world here, so it's larger than any one city. So since there are people coming from the entire world here, and they are over, and the people traveling, so how could we ever have a situation of Egla Rufa? Answers the Gemara, the situation of Egla Rufa will be strictly be Yeshevas Ben Aharim, where the city is a secluded area, and there aren't a lot of people walking here. And since there aren't a lot of people walking here, then it's only, the murder must have come from one of these cities, two cities, and we'll have to explain that there is no one city larger than the other city, and there we bring the Egla Rufa from the closest city to the corpse. Ask the Gemara Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, if a bird was found within 50 amas of the nest, we say that it belongs to the person who owns that nest. It seems, even though there are other nests in the area that are larger. So we see that we follow in our Mishnah, Karoiv versus Rochik, and says the Gemara, Bedaleka, where there is no larger nest in that area. Ask the Gemara, Ihochi, if that's the way we're explaining our Mishnah, Eima Sefer, let's continue learning the Mishnah. If it was found, Chutz Michamishim Amo, if it was found more than 50 Amos away from the nest, Hareyu Shamoitzai, then we say it belongs to the person who found it. Vida Leka, now if there's no other nest in that area, Vadimahu Mafal, it must have fallen from that one nest that's here. There's, even though, and why does the Mishnah say that the finder could keep it? Why don't we say that it came from the nest that's as close as possible? Answers the Gemara, Hachamai Skinin, B'medada. Our Mishnah is referring to a bird that only haps. And the halacha says the Gemara, Amar Rav Ukva Bar Choma, Kol Medada, anything that only haps, a bird that only haps, Ein Medada Yos Menun. It can't hap more than 50 amma. So, since it happed, and this bird was found more than 50 amma away from its nest, it didn't come from there, because birds that are only 50 birds that only hap cannot hap that far. It's important to qualify this issue when we speak about roiv and we speak about korov, that the Paiskim tell us that even though Rav Chanina is telling us that roiv supersedes karev, it doesn't mean it has to be taken into context. One point I saw, Rav Chaim Kamievsky says it, many others say it, that a roiv has to be a significant roiv. If it's a roiv just by a very small amount, that won't be a situation of roiv. Similarly, if it's a situation where things very much, where the facts very much point that it's coming from the Karuv, there the halacha is certainly that we have to take that into consideration. I saw a very interesting shaila. We know that the minig, the custom in many shuls is that people give tzedakah on Erev Yom Kippur. Plates, pushkas are put out, and money, people give tzedakah by Mincha Erev Yom Kippur. And money was found on the table, and it was closer to a plate that didn't have so much money. But there was a plate further that had a lot of money. And the question is, where should we assume that that money comes from? Does it come from the closer pushka with less money, or does it come from the further pushka where there is more money? According to Chanina, we follow the roiv. So the Paiskim say, first of all, we had to know that this was a roiv that was there throughout. To say that there's a roiv now, that at the end, after davening, that's where there was more money in one pushka over the other, wouldn't be a proof, because we have to have a constant roiv. Besides the fact, the Paiskim say, that we have to have a constant roiv, the Paiskim also point out that for a roiv to be considered, it has to also be a situation, as we've been discussing, that the roiv is a very strong roiv. And if it's not a very strong roiv, or, as we've also been saying, the karev seems to be making sense that it comes from the karev, there we just don't follow Rav Chanina's opinion that we follow roiv under all circumstances over karev. Continues the Gemara. By Rabbi Yirmiyah. Ragel achas b'toichnun amma. If one foot of the bird is within 50 amma, ragel achas chutz b'chamish amma, and another foot is outside of 50 amma, mahu, what is the halacha? Says the Gemara, do'afku Rabbi Yirmiyah b'midrasha. For asking this question, Rabbi Yirmiyah was expelled from the Beis Medrash. And the Mefarshim explained, why was he expelled for this question? So Rashi says, because it's a foolish question. It's a question that doesn't come up. Tosfos takes issue with that pshat, because Tosfos says that there is no foolish question. All questions are good questions. So before we say Tosfos pshat, I saw Mefarshim try to defend Rashi, saying, of course, there are no foolish questions. But it was obviously Rabbi Yirmiyah's custom to always ask these kind of questions. And that's what bothered them. Of course such a question is legitimate, but don't constantly ask these type of questions. Another pshat that I saw, Taisha's pshat, is that the reason they were dissatisfied with Rabbi Yirmiyah's question, because that's the way all shiurim of Chazal say. We have constantly shiurim, Dalet Amos, Akazayas. So if it's below the shear, it's below the shear. And if it's at the shear, it is the shear. So the same here. If Chazal, as we looked in the previous Gemara, said 50 amos is the shear, 50 amos is the shear. I saw a beautiful vart from the Pnei Menachem quoting Demri Emes, his father, saying that this Gemara actually teaches us how one is supposed to learn. One is supposed to learn completely immersed in his learning. Both feet, all of his energy, all of his concentration should be in his learning. And what happened here, where Rabbi Yirmiyah asked, what happens if somebody learns 1 foot in the Beis Medrash and 1 foot outside of the Beis Medrash? So the Gemara says, if somebody learns in that way, not giving his entire concentration and energy to his learning, then he cannot have success in his learning. Success in learning requires full concentration.